States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Amanda L. Meredith presiding. All of the business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. I am Judge Meredith. To my right is Judge Toth, and to my left is Judge Faldy. We are here today in the matter of Webb versus Wilkie, docket number 180966. The issue before the court is whether the veteran is entitled to disability compensation for a mental disorder which he alleges is the result of his service in Vietnam. As indicated in our August 15th order, the court is primarily interested in hearing the party's arguments concerning the appellant's contention that his statements regarding psychiatric symptoms may show a disability in the absence of a current diagnosis. Will counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Christian McTarnigan and Deborah Walker from the law firm Chisholm and Kilpatrick from Sir
Webb. Good morning, Your Honor. Drew Silo along with Sarah Christina representing the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Okay. Thank you. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. The board denied Mr. Webb's service connection because, in its opinion, he did not have a psychological disability. But what's evident from its decision, Your Honors, is that it was simply searching the record for a diagnosis. As the Federal Circuit held in Saunders, a veteran doesn't need a diagnosis in order to have a disability under VA law. The definition of a disability is quite broad under 1110. It refers to functional impairment in earning capacity. In fact, the Federal Circuit in Saunders acknowledged that psychological, psychiatric disorders are among the conditions that can cause functional impairment without a diagnosis.
So are the PTSD ratings, are they successive and cumulative? Because it looks like the 0% does require a formal diagnosis.
No, Your Honor, I don't think the post-traumatic stress disorder diagnostic code is successive. And insofar as the 0% rating, it does in fact use the word diagnosis, but Mr. Webb's condition, his disability, would be rated by analogy to the post-traumatic stress disorder or one of the many psychological disorders that fall under the umbrella of 4.130.
Okay, so the requirement of a formal diagnosis wouldn't apply to, if you say, a 30% rating or a 50% rating?
No, Your Honor, we don't believe.
The 0% says if you have formal diagnosis but other signs aren't—I forget the exact language—aren't
severe enough,
right? So, but you're saying there's no formal diagnosis requirement for, you know, the higher ratings as you ascend the scale.
Well, I don't think that that 4.130 can require a formal diagnosis in order to constitute a compensable disability, because that would be conflicting with what the Federal Circuit said is required under 1110, which is functional impairment equates to a disability.
But so that, I mean, your argument would be to the extent that either 3.304F or 4.130 require a formal diagnosis, they would be invalid, right? I mean, that's basically your argument.
If this court were to find that those regulations, and first I'll answer your question with respect to 4.130, because I think the answer is a bit different for 3.304F. Under 4.130, if it is in conflict, yes, Your Honor, then the statute would prevail, and that part would be invalid if it were to be applied in that way. For 3.304F, Your Honor, I think the answer is a little bit different, because that deals with post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's not what we're talking about here. Mr. Webb, although there is a part of our brief that discusses the inadequacies with the post-traumatic stress disorder part of this case in the examinations, assuming that we're speaking about the Saunders issue here, since he doesn't have post-traumatic stress disorder, he doesn't need a diagnosis to be considered had to have a psychological disability under the Federal Circuit's rubric of what a disability means in Saunders.
Can I back you up? What is it that you think the board did here as to a condition other than PTSD? So on page 2 of the board decision, in its finding of fact, it says that the appellant didn't have PTSD or any other psychiatric condition. But then in its analysis, as to a non-PTSD condition, it seemed to say there's no ideological link to a current disorder and no in-service incident. So is it clear to you that no diagnosis as to a non-PTSD condition is why the appellant's claim was denied?
So I think that the record on page 2 speaks directly to that. The board declares that Mr. Webb does not have post-traumatic stress disorder or any other psychological
But not disorder. Because it doesn't say because he doesn't have a diagnosis.
So that would refer to the pages 9 and 10 of the record, Your Honor.
Where it says that as to PTSD, but what do you read it as saying as to a non-PTSD condition?
Well, that section, that whole paragraph of the board's decision, excuse me, Your Honor, ends with a discussion of the unspecified cannabis use disorder. So in our reading of the board decision, first the board looked at whether Mr. Webb had a diagnosis of a post-traumatic stress disorder. Then the board looked for another diagnosis in the record. And the only other diagnosis in the record is this cannabis use disorder. And that was challenged by the 2016 examination. But nonetheless, that's what we believe the board was talking about when it was discussing the nexus and the incident in service. The board wasn't looking at this question at all. In fact, there's no discussion whatsoever of functional impairment and whether the symptoms cause functional impairment in the board's decision.
Okay, but the board did not explicitly say as to a non-PTSD condition, you can't have service connection because there's no diagnosis. So assuming that's correct, if the board decision didn't turn on that issue as to whether or not there was a current diagnosis for non-PTSD, is it ripe for our review?
I think it is, Your Honor, because I would argue that the fact that the finding on page 2 of the record is very explicit in finding that there is no psychological disability. But that, in fact, is not true because the board was using the wrong rule here. The board didn't look to see at all whether Mr. Webb's psychological symptoms caused functional impairment, which equates to, as the Federal Circuit held in Saunders, a disability under VA law. And so the question of whether these symptoms cause functional impairment is, and it's the reason why we're asking for remand, Your Honors, is because this court needs to tell the board that it used the wrong rule, that functional impairment caused by psychological symptoms can equate to a disability under VA law, and remand for the board to adjudicate this case under the correct statement of law. None of these errors are harmless, Your Honor, because the record reflects that Mr. Webb does, in fact, have functional impairment due to his psychological symptoms. In fact, the 2014 VA examiner noted that Mr. Webb's symptoms cause social and occupational impairment due to mild or transient symptoms. His sleep impairment causes fatigue during the day. His anxiety attacks have affected his service. He's had nightmares about his morgue duty where he had to bag soldiers and sometimes only parts of those soldiers in order to ship them back home to the United States for burial. He has difficulty concentrating. All of these are psychological symptoms that show the prejudice of the board's error, which is failure to adjudicate this case under the correct rule, under the correct conception of what a disability is.
So assuming we could reach the issue of what Saunders requires and whether it can be applied outside the context of pain, if we were to find that Saunders is not limited just to the pain context, could we then apply Saunders to the facts of this case in the first instance, or is that something that we would need to send back for the board to do?
I think you'd have to send it. I think that's why the correct remedy here is remand, Your Honor, because the board, nor the examinations that it relied on, was looking to whether these psychological symptoms cause functional impairment because they didn't understand correctly what a disability is or was during its analysis.
But Saunders hadn't actually issued yet at the time of the
board
decision.
That's true, it hasn't. But the Federal Circuit, in interpreting the plain language of the statute, held that a disability equates to functional impairment in earning capacity.
Okay, so let me follow up on that point. The Federal Circuit and this court in Marcellino have both said that determining what should be a disability falls outside the jurisdiction of our court under 7252B. How would you address that point? Do we even have jurisdiction to say whether a non-diagnosed psychological condition can be service-connectable under 1110?
You absolutely do, Your Honor, not only because the Federal Circuit said that that's what disability means under 1110, but also because what Marcellito turned on is the fact that obesity is not an injury or disease. That's an entirely separate part of the statutory structure. Same thing with refractive error, Your Honor, or personality disorders. The Secretary has said that these particular conditions are not an injury or disease related to service. So that's a separate part of the statute.
So if the Secretary argues today that their regulations, in fact, do require a diagnosis in order for a psychiatric condition to be service connected, would you then say we don't have jurisdiction to address that question? If their own regulations say it's not a disability for compensation purposes.
Well, then the regulation would be, that part of the regulation would be invalid.
But do we have jurisdiction to address that? Of what is a disability? The question of what is a disability? I mean, here's the language from Marcellino. The court does not have jurisdiction to entertain the argument that obesity should be considered a disability.
I'm trying to remember the preparation for Marcellino. I'm trying to remember the case. In that particular case, I think the distinction between Marcellino is arguing that obesity is a disease and a disability, but the Secretary outlined in his VA General Counsel opinion that obesity is not an injury, could never be an injury or a disease related to service. Therefore, it could never be a disability. I think the analysis is different here. I think the question is whether a 4.130 is a appropriate codification of what a disability is under the statute. And I think that you do have jurisdiction to review whether a statute, whether a regulation is a valid interpretation of the statute, because that would conflict with 1110. The Federal Circuit in Saunders exclamation that functional loss and functional impairment in earning capacity is all that you need to constitute a disability under VA law.
But does it change when the diagnostic code itself is basically a symptom-based code, right? Because a symptom would be something like a functional impairment, right? So we could recognize, for instance, from Saunders, that pain is a functional impairment and can form the basis of a disability rating. However, with a separate diagnostic code that's symptom-based, what we can't do is effectively insert into that diagnostic code symptoms that aren't there. That's clearly the Secretary's job to figure out which symptoms are deserving of being rated or not. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think so, Your Honor.
Right, which is, I mean, how would, if we want to import Saunders into, say, the PTSD context, how does that account for the fact that the diagnostic code itself is a symptom-based, is basically a collection of symptoms in terms of how they rate?
I think that Saunders doesn't necessarily, I don't think Saunders is being extended. I don't think that this court needs to extend Saunders. I think that Saunders has already held.
I agree. I mean, Saunders is law. It's binding on us. The question would be whether it would apply, in a sense, in what insight it would shed into this particular context.
And whether it would require the court to add symptoms to a rating criteria?
Well,
I'm sorry, I don't
know. No, I mean, for instance, so if we take the PTSD rating and we look at the 0%, that requires a formal diagnosis,
yes,
right? And then we were to require that formal diagnosis maybe for 30 and 50%, there might be problems, that might create problems with Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
So if we sort of excise that and we just have a collection of symptoms and the severity and the amount of symptoms is how you figure out where you are in the ratings schedule, if those symptoms are effectively functional impairments,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
I don't see how we could recognize functional impairments that aren't already in the collection of symptoms that the Secretary has laid out.
I think I'm following that, Your Honor. I apologize for the
sure.
time that it took. But I would relate back to, I think that is a concept that this court's decision in Stankovich would help. That when you're reading by analogy, when you're trying to understand when it doesn't exactly fall within sort of for lack of the four corners of what the diagnostic code says, you have to get it close enough. And so I think that rating by analogy, for whatever bridge there is to draw, would help the court come to that conclusion.
I'm trying to make sure I understand your position. Are you saying that the secretary has no authority to look at a collection of functional impairments and just flat out exclude them from compensation?
If they're not diseases or injuries, Your Honor, yes, I do think that the secretary can exclude them. But if they are diseases or injuries that can be traced back to service and they cause functional impairment, that's the definition of a disability that the Federal Circuit has laid out. And I think that any attempt to not comport with that wouldn't be appropriate.
Different question now. What is your understanding of 4.125A?
So 4.125A begins with the phrase, or at least in the beginning of the regulation, a diagnosis. So I think that when we're dealing with 4.125A, a veteran, it presupposes that a veteran has a diagnosis. And that regulation requires that diagnosis be made in accordance with the DSM. So we would be in a diagnosis way to satisfy the three elements of service connection, right? Not in the functional impairment way, for lack of a better way to describe it, to demonstrate a disability and meet that first Shannon element.
And did not the board say they make no diagnosis, that they no PTSD or no other psychiatric disability?
That is correct, Your Honor. The board did say that.
All right.
In page 3 of the record.
So if the 4.125 states that if the diagnosis of a mental disorder does not conform to the DSM or is not supported by the findings on the examination report, the rating agency shall return the report to the examiner. So why does that not require, why does that in conjunction with 4.130 not say that all mental disorders have to come through the DSM window, and until they do, they're non-compensable, or they're not rateable, they're not service connectable, I guess is the better point.
Sure. Well, what's very interesting, Judge Valdi, is that that's not what the regulation says. The regulation says that if the diagnosis, so the preceding beginning of 4.125 presupposes that there is a diagnosis in the record. And if there is a diagnosis that the VA is supposed to accept as evidence of a disability without more, then that diagnosis must be made within the court.
Well, can't it be read, though, to be saying that only diagnoses recognized by the DSM are service connectable? It can't be read that way? In conjunction with 4.130, that talks about using the nomenclature of the DSM, and then the rating table where it says you need a formal diagnosis under the DSM?
I don't think that the regulations speak to that, Your Honor. I would respectfully disagree that when you're looking at 4.125, the diagnosis is what the rest of that part of the regulation turns on. And I think that we have a separate question here. The question, I think, is whether the board, and I don't think the board did, use the correct rule in understanding that a disability can be just simply functional impairment caused by, functional impairment that leads to occupational.
So your position is that all functional impairments are service connectable?
If symptoms... So the short answer to your question is yes, Your Honor. If a veteran's symptoms, competent, incredible symptoms, which in this case, Mr. Webb has competently, incredibly alleged these symptoms, and those symptoms cause functional impairment, that would be enough to satisfy prong one. Now, our position is not that it's service-connected immediately. There still has to be the satisfaction of the nexus element and the in-service occurrence element of the in-service injury. Here, the in-service injury was the veteran's work abuse, Your Honor. And so we're asking this court to hold that psychological disabilities, if they cause functional impairment, I'm sorry, psychological symptoms, if they cause functional impairment, constitute a disability, and to remand to the board in order for them to consider Mr. Webb's functional impairment and whether they cause a disability.
With or without a DSM diagnosis?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Can I follow up on that last point? Is it just functional impairment, or does it have to be an impairment that impacts earning capacity? And what evidence is there here of an impact on earning capacity? I think you mentioned fatigue and checking the windows and doors. How does that impact earning?
Yes, Your Honor, of course. You're absolutely right. The phrase from the Federal Circuit's decision is functional impairment and earning capacity. Here, the 2014 examiner's notation that there's mild and transient symptoms, although we're nowhere near the rating element of this case, that sort of collides with what maybe a 10% rating would be under the 4.130, which equates to occupational and social impairment that's caused by a psychiatric disability, which flows from 4.140, which is the rating schedule's intent to compensate psychological impairments, the inability to function under the daily activities of life and work.
So basically you want us to rely on the 2014 exam that you're simultaneously arguing is inadequate. To what extent should we take that into account? Don, could you please add 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. So we're not only relying on that, Your Honor. As you noted, Mr. Webb's psychological symptoms cause sleep impairment, which caused him to be fatigued during the day. He has concentration problems. He has hypervigilance. All of these clusters of symptoms, the board has yet to consider under the appropriate definition of a disability whether they cause functional impairment. So the error is not harmless, Your Honor. The prejudice of the error is the fact that these symptoms could cause functional impairment. There's a showing that they do cause functional impairment. As for the 2014 examination, we're challenging that examiner's finding that Mr. Webb...
Wrap up.
Of course, Your Honor. We just ask that this court please remand.
Thank you.
Drink this mic.
What's that?
Please the court. Secretary requests that the court affirm the board's decision in this case for 2 reasons. First, the board correctly found there was no diagnosis, and VA regulations expressly require a mental health diagnosis be diagnosed by a mental professional in accordance with the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, mental disorders of DSM who warrant VA benefits. And second, appellants attempt to extend the holding in Saunders must be rejected because the Federal Circuit did not, because it cannot overrule any standing law pertaining to what constitutes a mental health disability for VA disability compensation purposes. Your Honor, the VA regulations, a good place to start is section 4.125, which provides that a mental disorder must conform with the DSM criteria, and that absent a DSM diagnosis, the rating agency shall return the report to the examiner substantiate that diagnosis. As to 4.125, 3.304F speaks specifically to the purpose of 4.125. In that regulation, it explained that a formal diagnosis of PTSD is required in accordance with section 4.125. In other words, 4.125 specifically requires a diagnosis. Now, 4.125 is also incorporated generally to all mental disorders under 4.130 in the preamble. As Judge Choate pointed out, the general rating criteria specifically predicates a 0% rating on having a mental health condition that's been formally diagnosed.
Yeah, and I want you to answer the question I asked your friend on the other side. I mean, does VA view these ratings as cumulative and successive? I couldn't find an answer to that.
Yeah, so VA views them as, so the interesting part about 4.130 and the general rating criteria is that they increase in severity, so all the severities underneath it necessarily would be encompassed by the higher severity of occupational and social impairment, so in that way it does appear to be successive, but even to the extent this court were to determine it's not, 4.125 already requires that there be a mental health diagnosis, so both of those indicate
that mental health diagnosis by a mental health professional exist in accordance with the DSM criteria. To the extent this court, the secretary asserts that this court should not find that, well, let me take a step back. To the extent this court may consider finding that no mental health diagnosis is required, that would necessarily render all the regulations that speak to the requirement of a mental health diagnosis superfluous. And also, sorry as I shuffle around, it would put the rating agency in a situation where it has to make a medical determination. The rating board would necessarily be in a position where it would have to make an interpretation as to whether lay symptomatology, if it hadn't been diagnosed and attributed to any condition, whether it be a personality disorder, a mental health deficit, or an acquired psychiatric disability, and to make a determination as to what that functional impairment that's, as a, that's asserted by the claimant results from. That would be contrary to this court's holding in Colvin. And here, this case specifically paints that picture and makes it very clear that that would be an issue in this case specifically. The August 2014 examiner, on page 1593 of the record, specifically attributed the occupational and functional impairment that that examiner found to cannabis and alcohol use. Cannabis and alcohol use cannot be a disability under Section 1110. Without having a mental health diagnosis that those symptomatologies be shown to be attributed to, there's no way to service connect that condition. And to the extent that the rating agency, whether it be the board or the RO, would have to make that determination, it would necessarily be medical determination.
So let me ask you a question about your interpretation of 4.125, which I understand you to be saying you need a DSM diagnosis to have a service-connected psychiatric disorder disability.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
So prior to 96, 4.126, which I think was this predecessor, said this. It must be established first that a true mental disorder exists. The disorder will be diagnosed in accordance with the APA manual, the DSM. A diagnosis not in accord with this manual is not acceptable for rating purposes and will be returned through channels to the examiner. Now that changed to it be returned for, to be substantiated, which could mean something else than it's not acceptable and will be returned. It could mean that it's returned for more explanation as to how this disorder is being diagnosed absent compliance with the DSM. It could mean something else. Why does it mean what you say it is? Because I think the Secretary must have meant something when they changed the language.
Yes, Your Honor. So to the extent that language has changed, the Secretary's position is that 4.125 is plain on its face. But to the extent that Your Honor's finding that it's not plain on its face, the regulatory history of 4.126 and 4.125 is instructive and clearly shows that the intent was that 4.125 would continue those same requirements. In October 1996, the Secretary undertook a change to the regulations and changed 4.126 and 4.125 to their current language. In the notice and comment section of the Federal Register, there was a comment saying that it was not clear based on the new, there was concern that it wasn't clear based on the new language in 4.125 that a diagnosis would be required. And the Secretary, in response to that comment, specifically said that 4.125 continues the requirement of having a mental health diagnosis diagnosed by a medical professional in accordance with the DSM. You can find that at 61 FR 52966, and the pinpoint is 52699. Even to the extent that the language changed, it was clearly the intent of the Secretary by promulgating the new language in 4.125 to continue that requirement.
Thank you.
Could I ask you a question that I was talking to the appellant's counsel about? Is it clear to you what the board did here? In its findings of fact, it said there was no other mental health condition. But its analysis doesn't say that. It talks about no ideological link and no in-service treatment or diagnosis. So what is it the board did?
So the board specifically held that there was no mental health diagnosis for the purpose of PTSD. It then said to the extent that any psychiatric disability exists, there's no link to service. So not only would appellant here not satisfy the disability requirement under 1110, but he also would not satisfy the nexus requirement under 1110. And that language is the second to last paragraph of the board's decision on page 9 of the record. So here, not only is there no disability, but there's no link to service to the extent there was a disability.
So your view of the board decision, it did not turn on whether or not there was a current diagnosis of a condition other than PTSD?
Not necessarily based on the language used by the board, but I think that it's also clear that the Secretary's regulations specifically do require a mental health diagnosis in accordance with the DSM. So the board could have stopped its analysis at that point. It went further, though, and pointed out that there was no nexus. So, you know, even if the court were concerned with the disability element, appellant would still fail as to the nexus element.
But it looked like in the December 2016 exam, the examiner did his test. So he's assessing symptoms associated with trauma, and he found a whole elevated range of symptoms, and seemed to be somewhat consistent, at least with what we recognize as an anxiety disorder. And then, as a rationale, just concluded that there's no diagnosis. It seems a little bit at variance with the findings of the examination. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure, Your Honor. The Secretary's reading of that evidence is that the mental health professional was making a medical determination that even though there was symptomatology, it didn't rise to the level of a DSM diagnosis, which is what's required. That's something that this court has affirmed the Secretary's ability to find that certain thresholds have to be met in order to rise to a level of disability, even if there's some asserted impairment. In Palchewski, this court addressed whether 3.385 properly defined what a hearing loss disability was. And in 3.385, the Secretary defines that as hearing loss above a certain decibel level. And here, the Secretary was making the same kind of a determination that even though there may be symptomatology, it has to rise above a certain threshold, which is requiring a DSM diagnosis. And with Judge Falvey pointed out, the old language in 4.126 had a lot of language in there that was explaining the reason why a true mental health disorder was required to exist. It spoke about normal reactions to discouragement, anxiety, depression, and that for whatever the reason, it must not be accepted by the rating board as indicative of psych neurosis. Moreover, mere failure of social or industrial adjustment or the presence of numerous complaints should not, in the absence of definite symptomatology, typical of a psychoneurotic or psychological factor affecting physical condition, become the acceptable basis of a diagnosis in this field. So that was a recognition by the Secretary that the human psyche is very complex, and there are certain understandable reactions to stress that we have every day or things that happen in our past that have an impact on us. But in order to rise to the level of a disability for Title 38 purposes, that requires a DSM diagnosis by a mental health professional, because this is a medical determination that needs to be made by those specifically trained in the field.
Could you give us the Secretary's position on what authority the court has to opine on whether psychiatric symptoms in the absence of a current diagnosis could be a disability for purposes of the rating schedule?
Yes, Your Honor. As you pointed out, Judge Meredith, earlier, this court in Marcellino found that courts were precluded to review the Office of General Counsel's determination as to what was it, that obesity was not a disability. The Federal Circuit has also found in Wainer v. Principe that courts were precluded from reviewing what should be considered a disability, and that's the same condition that's the same issue that we have here. Both the Federal Circuit in Turry and this court in Palchewski found that 1110 was not clear as to what a disability was, and that the Secretary had the ability through regulations to fill the gap in determining what constitutes a disability, what level certain impairments must come, must rise to, and excluding other disabilities such as, or issue problems such as obesity. And here we're dealing with the same type of issue where this court, where appellant is asking this court to review the secretary's determination that a disability necessarily requires a DSM diagnosis. And the secretary would assert that the Federal Circuit's decision and this court's decision in those cases preclude the court from reviewing those determinations.
So our work here is done, right?
So to speak.
So let me test the limits of that. So if the secretary adopted a regulation that said you needed a diagnosis from a left-handed doctor at the VA Medical Center, the John Dingell Medical Center here in Detroit, in order to obtain service connection, and we'd have no authority to review that under 1155, I guess.
Your Honor, the test would be whether that determination was arbitrary and capricious, and then not otherwise in accordance with the law. I may be missing a step in that.
So that's the only unconstitutional question, I guess.
Exactly, Your Honor. So in other words, is the Secretary's determination as to what constitutes a disability, is there a reasonable determination? Is there a good reason for it? A rational basis, so to speak. Where there is a rational basis, it's not arbitrary, capricious, or otherwise not in accordance with the law, and that determination should be upheld. So in other words, the Secretary is asserting that Chevron is the proper test for that.
Assuming the issue's ripe and there's jurisdiction to address it, what's your position as to Saunders? Is it strictly that it's limited to pain?
I think that that's unclear at this point. I don't know that it's specifically limited to pain. But certainly the Secretary's regulations are instructive as to what levels, what symptomatology and disabilities can qualify for Title 38 compensation. In Saunders specifically, they didn't stop their analysis at just saying anything that causes functional effect. They then had posed the further question of whether pain can be a disability under Title 38 purposes. And they looked specifically to the Secretary's regulations under Title 4 to see whether pain can cause functional impairment. And because under 4.40, 4.49, other regulations, there was a specific finding by the Secretary through those regulations that pain can cause functional effect. The Federal Circuit found that that pain can rise to the level of a disability for 1110 purposes. But much in the same way, the Secretary's regulations here indicate that a specific disability be diagnosed in the DSM by a mental health professional. And that's very clear on its face and clear that the Secretary's intention was not to compensate for lay assertions of mental health symptomatology to fall below that threshold.
So you're not contending that Saunders could apply outside the pain context, or not contending that a diagnosis is always required, it's just that it is here because it's required by your regulations, it's your
correct
position.
Right. That's the Secretary's position.
And Saunders would be different if pain was disallowed under the Secretary's regulations.
Yes, of course that would have to go through notice and comment, and have to be properly promulgated. There would have to be withdrawal of regulations. But that is possible, but at this point, pain is certainly a disability, and the Secretary is not in this venue seeking to limit Saunders beyond the four corners of this case, which is whether a mental health diagnosis is required in accordance with the DSM to constitute a disability. Your Honor, I don't have anything further. In conclusion, the Secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm the board's decision because VA regulations specifically require a mental health diagnosis in accordance with the DSM, and Saunders did not change that determination or overrule any prior case law. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The secretary concedes that Saunders is not limited to pain, which is quite a bit different from where this case started, I believe. Saunders does not need to be extended to control this case. The Federal Circuit stated, held very clearly, that if symptoms cause functional impairment, a veteran has a disability insofar as meeting the first prong of the Shepard elements. The board only undertook part of the probated analysis here. The board only looked to whether Mr. Webb had a psychological disability, but it never went to the next step, which is to determine which symptoms that might not be related to that disability cause functional impairment. We have no diagnosis here in the record. And because of that, these symptoms are, for lack of a better way to describe it, floating in the record, floating out there in the air, to be either connected with the diagnosis, which they weren't in this case, or discussed through the lens of whether they cause functional impairment. That's a part of the analysis that never happened in this case. It's not harmless error here, Your Honors, because of the symptoms that Mr. Webb has suffered since his time in service. The doctrine is self-limited, because a veteran doesn't only need to show that they have symptoms, but they would also need to show that they have functional impairment due to those symptoms in order to meet the test as to what's a diagnosis. And the court was asking about whether there's an indication here. There is an indication here, Your Honors, because Mr. Webb has had nightmares about his service since he's left service. After service, he felt hopeless and without a purpose. And today, he suffers panic symptoms. He suffers intrusive memories. That's enough to show that there's an indication. And that's why one of the reliefs that we ask for in our briefs, Your Honor, is that when once remanded, there's enough for Mr. Webb to have an examination here. And if the court has no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
The case will be submitted for consideration. The court is now adjourned. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.